And here we are. Okay, great. So lovely to see many students who I know from the past and some new students who I don't know. We are recording this class, so if anybody wants to share it at some later date, they can. And I've been asked to say that today's class is dedicated in loving memory of Lauren Shore, Zichrona Livracha, a devoted mother, daughter, sister, and dedicated teacher. And it's dedicated by her parents, Shelley and Ian Shore. May her neshama have an aliyah, and may Shelley and Ian have a much nechama. So that's number one. Number two, I'd just like to share with you, since it's relatively new, a podcast that I do on a daily basis. I call it the Tanakh Podcast, and it is a daily podcast, about 10 minutes every day, on a chapter of Tanakh following the 929 order. And any of you are welcome to find it on any of where you get podcasts, or just type in Alex Israel, the Tanakh Podcast, and you'll be able to get it on Spotify. Even if you don't have a Spotify account, you'll be able to get it on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. It's called the Tanakh Podcast, and it's with a C-K-H at the end. Tanakh spelled T-A-N-A-K-H. And it's a daily podcast. We're up to the stories of Eliyahu in Sefer Melachim at the moment, and about 10 minutes a day. All right. So first of all, Yishar Koach, congratulations for everybody who got out the kitchen today, either out the kitchen or out of the supermarket. Or, you know, it's quite an achievement at a time like this to teach, to be learning Torah. So well done. And we're going to be learning about the concept of chipazon. So I hope people can see the source sheet. 1 second. Just organizing my screen. Here we go. Chipazon, leaving fast, leaving slow. And I hope people will understand the title in a few minutes. And let's start by understanding that there is something about the night of Pesach which seems to be related to the concept of speed. We all know that probably the reason for matzah, right? As my teacher Menachem Liebtag always used to say, matzah is the first fast food, right? Fast food. Why do we eat this matzah? Matzah zu shanu ochlim al shum ma, al shum shelo hispik p'tei kam shel aboteinu lachmitz. Because our forefathers, our ancestors, dough did not have time to rise. Ad shenigla aleihem melech malchei amlachim HaKadosh Baruch Hu, until God, the King of Kings, appeared and redeemed them. As it states, Vayafu'et ha-batzeik asher utzim mitzrayim ugot matzot ki lo chametz ki goshu mitzrayim v'lo yachlu litmameh v'gam tzeda lo asu lahem. So, because it's as it says in the verse in Shemot chapter 12, they baked the dough that he took out of Egypt as cakes of matzah, but not chametz, for they were expelled from Egypt, could not delay, and they had also not prepared food for themselves. So let me already start challenging this assumption. Really, we only have matzah because we came out in a big hurry? There wasn't time. What do we always say? There wasn't time for the bread to rise. So I'll ask question number one. Question number one. Pesach is meant to be about questions, right? Question number one, you all probably know about how long it takes to bake matzah. How long does it take to bake matzah? From the time that the flour hits the water, 18 minutes. Really? We came out in more than 18 minutes? I mean, in less than 18 minutes? Why didn't the bread have time to rise? Number two, question number two is, we actually ate matzah before we came out of Egypt. If you look at the beginning of that same chapter, chapter 12, it says, "Bachlu et habasar b'layla hazeh," source number two, "Sli'esh u'matzot al marorim yuchlu." They were told, even before they left, that they should eat it with matzot, that they were going to eat matzah on the night, on the eve of their exodus, even before they left. Matzot al marorim yochlun, unleavened bread. So what do we have here when it comes to what do we have here when it comes to the notion of unleavened bread? Really, did we come out that quickly? And number two, we ate before we even came out. Third, there seems to be something about the night, even before we get to matzah, which is about hurrying, which is about rushing. What do we have? We have the notion, again, look here in source number 2, verse 11. V'kacha tuchlu oto, motnechem chagurim. This is how you should eat the Korban Pesach. Your loins should be girded, just to explain what that means. Okay, that means that when people were going to go on a journey, if they wanted to, they had long robes, it'd be difficult to walk. So what they did was they put on a belt. Maybe the belt helped them carry things as well, like weightlifters put on a belt. But also what they would do is hitch up their skirts so they could allow people to move more easily and they wouldn't be restricted by their long robes. So that's motnechem chagurim, gird your loins, na'alechem baragleichem, your shoes on your feet, makelchem b'yedchem, with your walking stick in your hand, v'achaltem oto b'chipazon, and you've got to eat it really quickly. There's a sense of speed in this night. Why? Why, even before we came out, there was a sense of speed. What's this notion that everything has to be so fast? Why do we have to eat it so fast? Now, the Ibn Ezra says, take a look at source 3. He says, as for their hurrying, b'tam b'chipazon, why? Shelo yitakvu, that they shouldn't get stuck. V'yimharu lo'achlo lifnei bo rega ha-mashchit, shivsach Hashem al ha-petach. In other words, that we had to eat, if everybody takes time, right? If it's anything, can you imagine you're moving out of Egypt after hundreds of years of living in Egypt? Everyone's got to pack a bag. You know, I know with my family, even when we're going on vacation, nobody's ready to go. Can you imagine everybody's packing up their rooms? So you call everybody down, come down for the Korban Pesach. And, you know, this one says, no, I'm not ready, Mom. I'm not ready, Dad. I'm still packing. You know what? I won't eat. They've got to eat the Korban Pesach before the midnight hour, so says the Ibn Ezra. And therefore, there's a sense of chipazon. Here we might call chipazon mobilization, a sense that everybody's got to be in, everybody's got to be on, and we want everybody to eat. Again, I'll read the Ibn Ezra. It's in order they won't delay to facilitate their eating before the moment in which the destroyer would arrive, in which God would leap over their homes, right? Hence, God commanded the lamb be fire roasted. It had to be sli'esh, that it would be very, very swiftly. It would be eaten quickly. And likewise, our rabbi said, it must be eaten by midnight, right? Eino ne'echal ela ad chatzot, ve'eino ne'echal ela tzali. So it has to be eaten quickly. We've got to do it by midnight. Maybe even in your Seder, sometimes somebody who says, oh, we've got to hurry, we've got to eat the afikoman by midnight. Now, I want to say something about this word chipazon. If you look at Rashi, and here I'm drawing a little bit on Aviva Zornberg, where Aviva Zornberg draws on this Rashi, and she says, what is the chipazon? It denotes not only speed, but a sense of panic. As it says, the David nechbaz lalechet, or ashech ligu aram b'chofzam, there's a sense of panic. And if we even take the word Pesach, Pesach indicates, right? How do we translate Pesach? Passover, right? I always said that obviously this was a nice, genteel, Victorian English translation, because what is Pesach is passing over. But if you take a look at the Rashi here again, HaKorban Korui Pesach Al Shem HaDilug. The sacrifice is called Pesach because of the skimping and the jumping over. Shachodesh Baruch Hu Haya Medaleg Batei Israel Mibein Batei Mitzrayim. The Kofetz. He would jump. He jumped from one Egyptian house to the other. In other words, here we're talking about skipping, jumping. In other words, Pesach doesn't mean Passover. As I said, very genteel. It really means jump or leapfrog. Maybe we should call it leapfrog. Maybe we should all play leapfrog at the Seder, right? You want to do something fun with your grandchildren, right? So this is the jumping. Pesach means jumping. And to jump, if you want to leapfrog, you've got to take a run up. You've got to run. It's got to be fast. If you don't get some speed, you're not going to jump. You're not going to make it over. I'm trying to say, I'll go back to my question is, why chipazon? Why chipazon? Why is matzah associated with chipazon? And here, we're going to say a few things. Number one, they said because the bread didn't have time to rise. But my question was, how much time does the bread need? Number two question, okay? They already were told to eat this fast food before they left. And number three, it would seem to me that everything about Pesach is about speed. A lot about speed. Matzah's the fast food. Pesach's name indicates jumping, which has to happen fast. We have to eat by midnight. Maybe I'll say at this point, before I get to the next source, the source of the Tzidkan HaTzadik, that I have a friend of mine, Dr. Orit Avneri. She's a fabulous Tanakh teacher. And she likes to say that when we know the story of Exodus in the book of Exodus, when you know the story begins with the problem of birth, that the Jewish people are expanding too fast. And we want to curb the birth of the Jewish people. We then move to the notion of the mialdot ivriot, the midwives. Maybe it's the Jewish midwives or maybe it's the Egyptian midwives of the Jews. But whichever way, there's a sense of births. And then in chapter 2, we have the start of the birth of Moshe, right? We've got the conception and the birth of Moshe. And what she really wanted to argue was that if you want, the whole of Shemot, if you want, is a birthing story. If I take the work of Orit Avneri, what does she say here? She says, even if you want the notion of painting the doorposts with blood, right? We're born in blood. And she imagines Kriyat Yamsuf is almost like the birthing canal, where people who are, don't really have a life of their own come out, and maybe it's not incidental, but at the moment that we are born, that night of our birth, that night of which we're going to celebrate just in 2 nights' time, right? There is a tsa'aka gdola. There is screaming in Egypt as we are born and the Egyptian firstborn die. So if I take that image of birth, which is so associated with the book of Shemot, she made a very lovely point. She said, well, you can plan for a birth. You can even have you know exactly when the date is going to be, when the birth date is. You know when you've packed the bag for the hospital, but there's always going to be that moment when, is it now? Yes, it's now. Oh my gosh, we haven't got this ready. What did we forget? What did we this? What did we that? Oh, why won't the car start, right? There's always going to be a sense of panic, right? In a birth. It just, there's nothing you can plan here. You can plan and you think you're planning and then it doesn't go according to plan, right? So chipazon is the name of the game when you're trying to give birth to a Jewish people. Maybe we'll put it that way. So I definitely think that's part of it, but I'm going to try and sort of develop and thicken this idea of chipazon. And we're going to go through three or four dimensions of chipazon in our next few minutes together. And please excuse me if people are writing notes in the chat, because it's difficult for me to teach and read at the same time. So I'm just going to teach and then I'll take a look at the end of the class. But let's begin with our first snapshot of chipazon from the work of Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. And he's going to this, the first passage of the Tzidkan HaTzadik. And here he says the following. Beautiful passage. Reishit knisat Adam l'avodat Hashem tzarech liyot b'chipazon. The beginning of a person's divine service needs to be b'chipazon, in a rushed manner, or in a manner which indicates speed. K'mo shematzinu b'pesach Mitzrayim, just like we find in the Pesach of that year in Egypt, Shayan ne'echal b'chipazon, which was eaten in a hurry, v'lo pesach dorot. Rav Tzadok HaKohen is noticing something interesting, that year we had to eat b'chipazon, but every other year, how do we eat? We eat reclining. We eat in a state of luxury, k'b'nei chorin. Why the first year do we have to eat b'chipazon, but never after that? What's going on? And he says, "Mipnei shehatchala lenatek atzmo mikol ta'avat ha'olam." When a person wants to develop something in avodat Hashem, at the beginning you have to detach yourself from all of your worldly entanglements, your worldly pleasures. Shumukushar b'hem tarich lishmor harega. You need to preserve that moment of excitement, that moment of that moment in which you feel the initiative, where you feel the enthusiasm. Alach boz, right? Chipazon, and you need to seize the day, seize the moment. Lamaher latzeit mehem ula yuchal, ba'achakach yelech b'mitinut, and then you can go slowly. Ula'at kedin pesach dorot. What's Rav Tzadok talking about? He's talking about Avodat Hashem, but a great example would be me on a regular basis going to go out for a run. Okay, I go running regularly, but it's never something that comes to me easy. I can always find 15 excuses. Oh, I'll write another email. I've got to check that document. I've got to do this. If I want to go out running, I've got to just say, now, do it, go, get changed, put on your sneakers and go out running. Push myself out the door. Otherwise, it never happens. It's something that needs a lot of effort and it's difficult to do. And he says that's true about any time when you feel the impetus. We've all got inertia in life. We've all got inertia and it's difficult to start good things. And therefore, in order to start something which is valuable or good, we need to do it b'chipazon. Anytime you want to do something, you need to sort of push yourself and get that, what would we maybe call it, start-up energy. That start-up energy. Now, I think this is, and he says, once you're on the road, once you're out the door, you can go, what does he say? La'at, b'mitino to la'at. You can go slow. But at the initial stage, you have to launch, right? Like you have to, you know, like a rocket, which has to exit the gravitational pull of the planet. And then it's in orbit. It's slow. But until that point, we need to push. You know, this is, I think, very true about Yetziat Mitzrayim. I can only take the example from my own family's history, who escaped Germany in February 1939. They came to the United Kingdom. They came to London. And we even had one of my great-grandfather who was sent before Kristallnacht to Dachau. And for whatever reason, they managed to get him out of Dachau, the concentration camp, on a technicality. And he was sent home that very day. They got him a ticket to Switzerland and sent him out of Germany. That night, the SS came looking for him, knocking on the door to take him back to the concentration camp. But they couldn't take him because he was gone. Sometimes you get a window of opportunity. And if you don't seize that window, you don't get out. Chipazon is to say, it's now. Now we can do it. Remember what happened in Egypt. We left on the 15th of Nisan and just a couple of days later, Paro says, I've changed my mind. If you get out, if you can get out now, because you never know whether in a few minutes you'll have that opportunity. So this is true about a behavioral chipazon, that whenever we want to launch something good, sometimes we have to seize the moment. We know it's the right thing to do, and there's no solution other than doing it now. I feel the enthusiasm, go for it, run with it. So that's option number, so that's the first thing, but it's true about behavioral things, but it's also true about Yetziat Mitzrayim. So that's going to be approach number one to chipazon. That why is chipazon so central to Yetziat Mitzrayim? Because that's how you get out of somewhere. If you leave it to go and you wait and this and that, then maybe it just won't happen. And I'm sure you've got examples in your own lives where, even in modern Hebrew, when you sort of miss the opportunity in Hebrew, you call it hachmatzata sha'af, and the word chametz, right? You let the chametz rise. You let it rise. You let hachmatzata sha'af. So that's approach number one. Approach number two, I'm going to go to source number six, which is simply reading the passage from Shemot. But I'd like to tell you that I do think that I want to re-understand what we mean when we say that the bread didn't have time to rise. Because why didn't it have time to rise? What was going on? Why wasn't there time? And if you had the bread in your bag all day, it doesn't rise. Why is it so significant that the bread didn't have time to rise? When didn't have time to rise? Let's reread the story, and I think we're going to see something surprising here in Shemot chapter 12. So let's start at verse 22 here, where Moses gives them instructions. They already knew what was going to happen. Let's see what's going to happen. Moshe says, take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that's in the basin, and apply some of the blood that's in the basin to the lintel and doorpost, and va'atem lo teitzu ish mipetach beito ad boker. And this is quite critical. And you should not leave the house till the morning. In other words, what time are we leaving? What time is the taxi coming? It's coming at 6 a.m. in the morning. Everybody's ready, and they know they're going to not bet more than that. This is a night when the destroyer, right, is going to be in the streets, and therefore don't leave till the morning. When the Lord goes through to smite the Egyptians, he'll see the blood on the lintel and the doorpost, and the Lord will pass over the door, not let the destroyer enter your house and smite your home. So you don't want to leave till the morning. So when do the bags need to be packed? By 6 a.m. When does the bread need to be ready? By the way, in that first year, they were told to eat matzah with the Korban Pesach, but there was no reason they couldn't make chametz. There was no reason why they couldn't take with them nice, fluffy chametz stick bread with them when they left. After all, we're going on a long journey, at least 3 days, they were told. We need sandwiches. Okay, so let's see what's going to happen. Well, Vayhi b'chatzi halayla, as the phrase goes, I'm looking at verse 29. V'Hashem ikah kol b'chor b'eretz Yitzrayim, b'chor paro ayoshev al kisoy, b'chor ashvi ashev b'beit abor, v'chol b'chor behema. So, in the middle of the night, God struck down all the firstborn. So what's the time? It's midnight. It's midnight. At what time do people realize the firstborn are dead? 12:05, 12:10, 12:15. So verse 30. And Pharaoh rose in the night with all his courtiers and all the Egyptians, because there was a loud cry in Egypt, for there was no house where there was not someone dead. And he summons Moses and Aaron in the night and says, up, depart from my people, you and the Israelites with you, right? Kumu tzu'umi tochami gamatem gamane Israel uruchu evduet Hashem kedaberchem. Verse 33, and the Egyptians, batechezak Mitzrayim, in English it says they urge the people on, but batechezak Mitzrayim, they put force. Lemaher leshalcham in the arutz kiamru kulam mitim. And now look at the verse. So the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading bowls wrapped on their cloaks upon their shoulders. Let me explain. What am I saying? Moses has told the people they're leaving in the morning, 6 a.m. Nobody's packed. It's midnight. Midnight, makat b'chorot. All the b'chorot die. By the time everybody realizes and comes to, it's 12:15, it's 12:30. Pharaoh sends a messenger post haste to Moses, says, I'm summoning you. Moses comes for it to get his expulsion papers It's 1 a.m. At 1 a.m., Moses and Aaron are told, up, depart from my people, you and the Israelites with you, go. And then Pharaoh sends an order to all of his men, to all of his military, to go and force the Jews out of their home. And verse 33, the Egyptians urge the people, saying, we'll all be dead. So at 2 in the morning, at 3 in the morning, there are Egyptians knocking on the doors of the Egyptian home and saying, get out, get out. Now, everybody was expecting to leave at 6 in the morning. And you know what they were actually planning to do? We know that in Egypt, they were expert bread bakers. So what they were doing was letting the dough rise. Why did the dough rise? Because they were planning to bake it where? Where were they going to bake it? They were going to bake it in their ovens. In order to bake chametz bread, you need an oven. Okay? Now, they're pushed out early. They were planning to leave at 6. So quickly, everybody gets a few possessions together. And what do all the, you know, families do? They grab their dough, which is yet unbaked. They thought they'd bake it at home before they left. And they'd take bread out of Egypt with them. But now what do? So when didn't it have time to rise? Not when we were leaving, before we left. It didn't have time to rise because we thought we were leaving at 6 a.m., but we actually left at 4 a.m. In other words, now I want to rephrase the phrase chipazon. It means not just leaving fast. It means leaving prematurely. It means leaving before we anticipated it. It means leaving in a hurried, like Rashi said, in a hurried, rushed manner. But let's see what happens. Verse 37. The Israelites journey from Ramses to Sukkot, about 600,000 men on foot, aside from children. Now, of course, they left very slowly. If you're leaving with 600,000 people, right, that takes a long time, right? Just getting everybody out of shul, right, is pretty slow, right? So everybody's walking slowly out of Egypt. And now look, verse 39. Vayofu, and this is the verse we quote in the Seder. Vayofu et habatzeik asher hotzi mitzrayim. And they baked their dough that they brought out of Egypt, ugot matzot. They baked it as flat matzah loaves, ki lo chametz, because they couldn't bake it as leavened bread. Ki gorshu b'Mitzrayim. They didn't leave. They were pushed out of Egypt. They were expelled from Egypt. Or in the English, they'd been driven out of Egypt and could not delay. Begun seidal or asulahem. Look at that phrase. Begun seidal. They had made no provisions. In other words, what we're saying is the original plan was nobody leaves their house till morning, nobody leaves their house till 6 a.m. And the plan was that by 6 a.m., everybody would have nice, big, fluffy chametz bread, which would be baked in an oven at home. That was the plan. Okay? However, something went wrong. Something went wrong in the plan. And what was that? That they got thrown out early. They got thrown out prematurely. What happened was that the people found themselves in this situation whereby they left in a hurry. Now, instead of taking bread out of Egypt, they take dough out of Egypt. Instead of taking nice fluffy bread, they're taking dough. So now I go back to our first text. Let's go back and remind ourselves about what we say about the matzah. 1 minute. Here we go. I'm looking back at source number one. I just want to read it in a new way. Okay. Matzah zu she'anu ochlim al shum ma. The matzah that we eat. So Karen is saying in the chat that, but they were told they'd leave b'chipazon. Well, I know that God knew that, but I'm saying it's a surprise for them, not necessarily for God. Why do we eat a matzah? Because the bread didn't have time to rise until God appeared to them and redeemed them. In other words, we got redeemed prematurely. As it says, they baked the bread, which they took out of Egypt, who got matzot. Let me say a word about this. How do you bake bread on the way? Okay? How do they bake bread on the way? You have something called a saj, right? So you have seen these things maybe when you come to Israel. You go to various different activities, and they have like a sort of a elliptical metal plate which you put on with a few twigs underneath. It heats up very, very heavy, and you slap on the dough, and the dough makes sort of a pita. That's the matzah. Now, Joseph's saying, who said they'd leave at 6 a.m.? I said that Moses had told them nobody's allowed to leave their house till morning. So what I'm saying is they left before morning. They were thrown out. By the way, this is an argument in Gemara and Pesachim. What is the chipazon? Is it chipazon de Israel or chipazon de Mitzrayim? Was it that we were hurried or the Egyptian hurried them out? But my claim is that they were planning to bake bread. The reason why they took out dough instead of bread was because they were pushed out of their homes unexpectedly. And then they didn't have a choice. They had to make their bread on a sash. They had to make it over the fire. That, you need an oven to bake bread, right? Even if the bread rises, you need an oven to make the bread. And therefore, what happens now is the bread is matzah. First of all, can you imagine their surprise? The kids all say, hey, we ate this last night. We ate this when we ate the Paschal lamb. It's almost like, wow, you know, we didn't expect to have this bread. So what I want to sort of rephrase chipazon in this moment is that chipazon in some way represents a sense of the unexpected. The unexpected that they came out sooner than they had imagined. And now I want to get to a third theme. A third theme that we're going to relate to as we look at this theme of chipazon. So theme of chipazon one was we need chipazon because we need to get out of Egypt quick. And when you need to get out of somewhere, you never know when the window will close, the window of opportunity. Second point about chipazon, that we came out before we anticipated. But now I want to go to the third aspect of chipazon, which it relates to the unexpected aspect. But let's see where we go to it. You know, in order to do this, let me maybe tell you a story. A few years ago, my sister lives in Bet Shemesh, and she has a neighbor, and her neighbor ran a Merkaz Klita. It was a Merkaz Klita for Ethiopians. See, this is probably going back about 10 years. And they had invited this guy who's the manager, the director of the Merkaz Klita. And I said to him, I said, have we done any better with the Ethiopian Aliyah than we did with the Iraqi Aliyah and the Moroccan Aliyah? The Aliyahs in the '50s and sixties. I'm sure you all know that the Aliyahs in the '50s and sixties, there was a lot of fallout and a lot of anger and a lot of resentment. I said, are we going to do better with the Aliyah, the Ethiopian Aliyah, than with the Moroccan Aliyah? He says, yeah, we'll do better, but it's still not going to be good. I said to him, I don't understand. Do we Israelis never learn from our mistakes? And he said, no. He said, we learn from our mistakes and we're learning a lot and we've learned a huge amount, but he says it's just impossible. I said, what's impossible? He said, well, the notion of taking somebody who comes from a mud hut somewhere in Ethiopia and bringing them to a first world country is a very complicated thing. And he says, it takes a generation to catch up. He said, it goes like this. You bring a family on Aliyah, and within a very short amount of time, 6 months, the kids have learned Hebrew. The parents still haven't learned the language. Now, what happens? The parents actually now need the children to take them round the supermarket, right? To be able to translate all the signs. The children have already sort of acclimatized and acculturated, and the parents are still left behind. Now imagine, you know, this child's now a 15-year-old and he wants to go out on a Friday night. And the father says to him, well, no, you can't go out on a Friday night. And he says, listen, Dad, he says, I'm the one who's, you know, I can go out whenever I want to go out, right? I'm the one who shows you around this place. Dad, look, what do you even do? You're just a janitor in the local school. I'm going to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a doctor, right? And suddenly what happens in this situation, right? The child repudiates his parents, right? He disrespects his parents. The parents go through heartbreak. By the time this child wants to sort of reclaim his Ethiopian identity, who knows whether his parents will even be alive? And this has been the story of immigrant populations from time immemorial. I'll never forget at my son's graduation at his yeshiva high school when there was an Ethiopian boy in his class, and he told a little bit of his story. And he said, the most difficult thing to learn as an Ethiopian, he said, was when you are an Ethiopian, he said, you're always taught that when somebody older than you speaks to you, you always hang your head, you put your head down, you look down. He said, if you think that you can survive in Israeli society by looking down, yeah, he says, in Israeli society, everything is about talking up to people, right? You've got to represent yourself, you've got to push yourself forward, you've got to have that Israeli chutzpah. He said, you know, it took me 2 to 3 years to stop hanging my head. But once I did it, I broke. He said, but you know what? He said, I hate myself that I had to break that beautiful, gentle Ethiopian side of myself, right? I had to do it to become Israeli and to survive, but I hate myself for doing it. It's a crazy thing, right? And any immigrant population has to go through this, right? They have to learn how to acclimatize. And what happens is frequently the older generation get left behind, the new generation, the kids, you know, find it very, very, they find it easy, and the older generation, and there's attrition, and it's difficult. Why am I saying all of this? Let's take a look at another layer of chipazon. Sharing my screen again. We're going to go to the Sfat Emet, source at the bottom of page two. Source number seven. Okay? Sfat Emet, the Ger Rebbe. And he's going to be talking about that scene at the Red Sea, where God says, Daber al bnei Israel v'yashuvu v'yachanu. Speak to the children of Israel that they turn back. And he says this. After the children of Israel left Egypt, b'chipazon, and he says, v'haya shelo b'hadraga. V'haya shelo b'hadraga. Like hadraga is like madrigot, like steps. It was in a non-gradual manner. And anything which is not gradual, he says, Ein ze davar shel kayama, it is unstable. Hutzruchu lashuv, they needed to come back. What's he talking about? Let's look at the next passage, it might help us. Says the Sfat Emet, by the way, the Ger Rebbe, he used to give a tish every single year, and frequently he used to go over the same themes. So we're lucky we've got 1 year and another year. The first passage here is from 1 year, and this is like from 2 years later. So Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yashuvu. He says, Yesh lomar tama inyan sheyitziyat Mitzrayim haya nes shelo b'hadraga. Yitziyat Mitzrayim was a miracle without any intermediate stages. 1 minute we were in Egypt as slaves, the next minute we're free in a desert, right? We didn't go through, let's say, a resistance movement. Like, I don't know, like, think about India. I don't know, India freeing themselves from the British. A sort of a process of emancipation. Or like we learn the history of Israel, and we start with the first Aliyah in 1882, and the second Aliyah in 1903, and we only got a state in 1948. So slowly you build your society, and you develop the language, Eliezer ben Yehuda, and then you develop the kibbutz, and then the Haganah, and then the this. None of that. And he says, because it was a nes shelo b'hadraga, it was sudden. We were catapulted, like those Ethiopians, from a mud hut straight to a first world country. The hila sha'ah, it's temporary. It can break apart very easily. But God wanted this redemption to be in the fabric of Israel. And that's what God wants of all of us. When the time comes, that you'll know how to act in a time when God is hidden. And therefore, they had to raise themselves on their own. Ulechein vayizaku, and that's why they cried. Ulechorah, he says, and it would seem like me'achar sheh ra'u nifla'otav. Once they saw the wonders of God, she'enem shiur lama yirau, why should they be afraid? They saw the 10 plagues. Why should they be afraid at the Red Sea? And the answer is, ki yadu she'ata tzrichim ligvor me'atzmam, because they realized they had to do it by themselves. Again, what's going on here? What am I trying to say? Let me try and explain. Give a few examples. Example of sudden change, right? The example that I mentioned was the Ethiopians. You move somebody out of Ethiopia, but it takes a generation for things to change. We came out of Egypt, and what are we always doing in the wilderness? Let's go back to Egypt. Let's go back to Egypt. Who were the generation who eventually made it to the promised land? That was 40 years later. It was actually their children. Because actually the people who came out of Egypt, they came out so suddenly. It was so rapid and radical a change, they couldn't bring themselves to encounter freedom. When they sent the spies, and the spies saw giants, and they realized they'd have to fight, they panicked. It's very difficult. You know, I'll give you another example. Balei Tshuva, right? Sometimes you have people, or Aliyah even. I remember a few years ago, somebody told me about, she told me about some of her friends who had come for a year in Israel and all decided immediately to make Aliyah and to do Shirut Lumi and to do university here. And she said that it really interesting. They did. They did Shirut Lumi and then they went to Bar Ilan and they did it all. And three of them finished Bar Ilan and then went back to America. Why did they go back to America? They said, you know what? I think our seminary brainwashed us. I was brainwashed into Aliyah. They had to go back to America. And then at a later stage of life, I think 2 or 3 years later, they all made Aliyah again. But they made Aliyah from a more mature space, right? Again, imagine somebody who's like become a Baal Tshuva very, very quickly. They didn't know anything about Judaism. They come to Israel. They discover they're Jewish. They go to a Baal Tshuva yeshiva. Within a little while, they're, I don't know, wearing a hat and jacket. They're wearing long skirts. And suddenly one day they wake up and say, is this me? Whereas I remember that there were lots of people who I grew up with who became religious through Bnei Akiva. They started going to Bnei Akiva at age 8 or age 9. Slowly they started learning about Shabbat. Then they started keeping a little bit of Shabbat, but their families weren't really religious. Then eventually at age 18, they went to yeshiva. Their move towards religion was much more gradual and much more solid because it was done in incremental stages. It was done over a long period of time. It was able to develop in a much more gradual stage. So what am I saying about chipazon? Chipazon is the only way to get the Jews out of Egypt. I'd say more than that. The Jews were absolutely passive during the 10 plagues. What did they do? God's doing all the heavy lifting. God's doing all the miracles. God, so maybe now we'll say chipazon means a radical leap. God's doing everything. It's an unnatural process. And now what's going to happen? We're going to go into the wilderness and God is going to say, all right. Now we're going to do it and you're going to start. You're going to have to go through the Red Sea. And the people are like, you what? Right? We're just a bunch of slaves, right? The people are panicking. Because if God takes you out of Egypt, that's one thing. But how about you coming out of Egypt? You can take the Jew out of Egypt, but what is it? Yeah, but can you take the Egypt out of the Jew? So this is my third point about chipazon, right? Chipazon, point number one, was this idea that we have to seize the day. Point number two was that we came out prematurely. But what the Sfat Emet is telling us is that what we actually came out was unnaturally, ungradually, in such a radical manner. It's almost like, you know that scene in the cartoons when the person's running, 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 and they're off the cliff. And then for about 3 seconds, they're off the cliff. They don't realize they're off the cliff. They're still in the air until when they realize they drop, right? You know, we came out of Egypt, but we hadn't. The penny and drop, right? And now what do we do, right? Now we've got to start grappling as a free people gosh, this is hard. And one of the people say, I want to go home. Let's go back to Egypt. The food was better, right? Et cetera, et cetera. And now we have all the teething trouble, right? What did my friend say? We're going to make the same mistakes with the Ethiopians than we made with the Moroccans. Not because we haven't learned the lessons, because it can't be any other way. It takes a generation. It takes 40 years. Wow. So in other words, what I'm saying is that chipazon is a blessing and a curse. Chipazon gets us out of Egypt, but chipazon, when you experience such radical change, you have to play catch up. And that catch up can be traumatic. And what Sfatimet is saying is we came out of chipazon. It was a nes. It was a miracle. It was shelo bahadraga. It was not gradual. It happened b'sha'a achat. And now, v'yashuvu, you have to go back. And now, I'm not going to take you out of Egypt. Now you're going to have to come out of Egypt yourselves. To come out of Egypt, we came out overnight. But for us to come out of Egypt takes a generation. And that's just a fascinating thing, right? That first of all, maybe it impacts the fact that literally God brought us out of Egypt. We didn't come out of Egypt. God brought us out of Egypt. But how do we come out of Egypt? And that's the interesting challenge of chipazon. Okay, so that's going to be approach or layer number three. So let's go to layer number four. And that's going to be with the help of Rav Yoel Ben Nun, one of my teachers. And this you should be able to see in source eight. And this takes us to, by the way, this very much in a beautiful way relates to the Omer, right? What we just said in the, because of course, once we leave Egypt, we still have a lot of development to do. But this is going to take us straight into Rav Yoel Ben Nun. And I've even given you the URL so you can check up the, and by the way, the approach I gave with the Sfat Emet, right, very much matches source number nine, which I'm not really going to read, but it's Rav Kook who talks about, maybe I'll just read Rav Kook and then we'll go back to Rav Yoel. Source number nine, the concept of matzah is characterized by the themes of bread of poverty and hasty departure. At the core, the hasty exodus was the initiative of God. It was meant to raise the level of Israel, not in accordance with gradual developments, which every other nation experiences, its physical and spiritual level proceeding slowly, but rather the great forces that were asleep in the spirit of the Jewish nation the entire time it was in Egypt, oppressed by poverty and degradation, both physical and moral, burst forth suddenly from potential to actual. Until the people of Israel were transformed from lowly states into a culture nation with a divine culture. But how did this happen? Instantaneously. So the notion of something instantaneous, that's the idea that we expressed level three, the Sfat Emet. So let's go to Rav Yoel, and that's what you see, source number eight. So let's talk a little bit about this. Rav Yoel Ben Nun, fascinating scholar of Tanakh and Eretz Yisrael, is going to imagine matzah as the beginning of a process, and chametz as the end of a process. Let me try and explain what he means. Imagine you took a dough and you rolled out the dough, right? You knead the dough. And then you did a freeze frame. You know, when you do those freeze frame photographs, or what do they call them? Not freeze frame. You know, you take a photograph every, I don't know, whatever it is, every minute, right? And then you do it and you see like a seed germinate and go into a plant and it grow, right? So you do
time lapse,
gradual
called time lapse.
Time lapse. Thank you. Time lapse photo. Thank you. Time lapse. Thank you for that. So imagine a time lapse. So he says something interesting. The symbol of Pesach is matzah. But the only time that we really bring chametz on the Mizbeach, chametz to the Beit HaMikdash, is on Shavuot. Shavuot, we bring chametz. And he says it's like a time-lapse movie. You know, let's take a look. Or put it this way. Every farmer, every baker, what do they want? They actually want the bread to rise, right? If the bread doesn't rise, then that's a failure, right? So what could we call matzah? Matzah could be called failed bread or maybe I'll call it braid, which is in a free frame at the beginning of its process. Let's read the passage and then I'll try and explain. Levan chametz represents the final goal to which the farmer aspires from the start of his work. Bread, which is chametz, expresses the end of a successful process, the longed-for end result, the realization of that which he had visualized at the start and which he pursued until he achieved it. Matzah, in contrast, represents a station in mid-process before the end result is achieved. It represents a deficiency that is waiting for completion. Apparently, redemption is a prolonged, difficult process requiring patience and a great capacity for discomfort. I'll say matzah is not comfortable food, right? It's difficult on our stomachs. The essence of the festival of matzot, then, is a severe warning against the illusion of a complete redemption that happens in a single moment. So let me try and explain what he is saying. What Rav Yehonatan is trying to say is that if you can imagine the freeze frame, the ultimate point is to get to Shavuot, right? To get to the bread. But we're at matzah. The bread is, and the matzah is going to be rising all the way through the Omer, right? That's how it's going to be. Now, let me try and, so on the one hand, we eat matzah to celebrate that we came out in an instant. On the other hand, it's still a raw redemption, a raw redemption. It's still flat. It's still indigestible. It's still difficult to be able to digest. And only as it matures, you know, let me give the example. I think we're with a pretty Zionist crowd, so I can give this example. There's always the question about whether you say Hallel on Pesach. Hallel on Yom Ha'atzma'ut. Hallel on Yom Ha'atzma'ut. So Rav Yehuda ben Nun, and the argument is whether, you know, some people will say, of course we've got to say Hallel. Look, we've got a country, we've got an army, we've got to open, you know, Jews can come back to the land of Israel. Whereas other people will say, yeah, but Mashiach hasn't come, we haven't built the Beit HaMikdash. So Israel's sort of in the middle space. So Rav Yehuda ben Nun says like this, in one of the footnotes on his article, he says, anybody who thinks that Israel is the fulfillment of all our hopes and dreams, it's as if you ate chametz on Pesach. Right? Why? Because you're saying that we've reached the end of the process. But anybody who thinks that they shouldn't say Hallel on Pesach, it's as if they didn't eat matzah on Pesach. Do you get it? Somebody who thinks that Israel is everything, it's like you ate chametz on Pesach. But if you don't say Hallel, it's like you didn't eat matzah on Pesach. What's matzah? What's Pesach? Pesach is saying, great, we've left Egypt. But Pesach is also saying you've got to eat matzah. Why? Because matzah is the beginning of the process. We've got a long way to go. We've got to get our Torah. We've got to build the Mishkan. We've got to get to Eretz Yisrael. We've got to establish a monarchy. There's so much to do. If we ate matzah on Pesach, what would we be doing? If we ate chametz on Pesach, what would we be doing? We're saying all we need is freedom and that's it. But that's not all we need. We need so much more. And that's why we eat matzah on Pesach. We eat matzah to remind ourselves. And the very fact that we eat matzah and in another chag, we eat chametz. What we're really saying is redemption is a long process. You know, breathe. Take a deep breath. It's going to be a long road. We know it's going to be a long road. We're only eating matzah at the moment. The bread has to rise. We came out so quickly, we're only half baked. We came out so quickly, we're only on stage one. In fact, the very day after Pesach, what do? We count one and two and three until we get to 49, until we get to Mount Sinai. So let's summarize our four levels, and then I'll take a look at the chat. We raise the fact, I'm going to try and summarize everything now. We raise the fact that we're even asked to eat matzah before we come out, that bread takes 18 minutes to rise. We came out slower than that. And everything seems to be rushed. And what I wanted to say was that there's something very rushed. Chipazon is one of the central themes. What does that mean? Option number one, Tzidkat HaTzadik, it's the window of opportunity. It sees the day. You don't always get an opportunity to be free. If you're going to leave, leave now because you've got the exit visa. Get out and you'll deal with the consequences later. Number two, Chipazon is premature leaving. The actual truth is that the reason why the people took out dough and not bread was because they were had to leave before they anticipated it. And in fact, they would have made bread, but they didn't have an oven. And therefore, perennially, for all time, the symbol of our premature leaving is this matzah, which we only took out. We didn't take out bread. We didn't take out gam seidah lo asu lahem. We didn't take out sandwiches. Instead, we took out dough, which we had to bake on the road. We had to bake it in a different, we didn't have ovens because we didn't take ovens with us, right? We had to bake it on a fire, on a sarge, and that's why it ended up being matzah. So we left prematurely. We might even say, ad shi nigla aleinu melech malchem lachim. God took us out. We didn't come out in our own time. We came out on God's time. Option source number three, which follows on from this, is that the very fact that we came out so suddenly in a moment means that we came out of Egypt, but there was a lot of Egypt still within us, and we hadn't developed in the natural way that nations develop. And therefore, the chipazon, if you want, is that the fact that our exodus is very unripe, and that we were catapulted, we were parachuted out of Egypt, but we still have a lot of growing to do in order to develop the techniques of freedom, to develop the culture of free people, to develop our national institutions and all of that. And this takes us to the last impression of matzah being the fast food. The matzah is not necessarily about being premature. Matzah is not just about the speed, but matzah is about reminding ourselves that we're at the start of a process. And maybe Rav Yoel is saying more than that, that there is a process, that it's not binary, that there's a process to undergo. And that we should recognize that process, and that process is an integral part. And therefore, we're not allowed to eat chametz. We eat matzah. Chipazon in this regard is that we're only at the inception of our national genesis. Of we're only a newborn baby, right? As is described in Yecheskel. We spoke about birth before, and that we have a lot of growing to do, which of course we're still doing, right? We're still doing. If anybody's been watching the news about Israel recently, we're still doing it, right? We're still growing, right? And we're still figuring it all out and trying to figure out what our priorities are and how exactly to make it work. So I hope this has enabled people to think a little bit more about the concept of the speed of redemption. And I'll take a look at the chat, but I'll just say that I just want to wish everybody a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. Really meaningful chag. And yeah, I see a lovely. Okay. If anybody wants to ask, you're welcome to unmute yourself and ask a question. Feel free.
Rabbi, in the meantime, I wish you Chag Sameach.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you very much.
I'm here. Okay. How are you doing?
Okay. There are some wonderful comments in the chat, but nothing really which is a question. So I think we'll leave it there. Great. I hope these were some new perspectives, and I hope you have a meaningful Seder, meaningful Sedarim, and discuss a lot of great ideas. Thank you so much.
Anyone who doesn't say Hallel on Pesach, that line again, it was so clever. I would really like to hear it again.
Rav Yoel said, anybody who thinks that the state of Israel is the fulfillment of all of our dreams as it is at the moment, it would be as if you ate chametz on Pesach. But anybody who won't say Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut, it's as if they didn't eat matzah on Pesach.
Last line again, one more time.
Anybody who doesn't say Hallel on Yom HaTzma'ut is as if they did not eat matzah on Pesach. The critical point being, of course, that when we say Hallel, we're not necessarily claiming that Israel is the fulfillment of everything we've ever dreamed of in Jewish history, but we are saying that we came out of Egypt at some level. And Egypt is just the beginning. The Exodus is the beginning of a long road.
Rabbi Israel, thank you so much. You always, always teach so well, and you give such wonderful new perspectives, and supported by text and So thank you. Chag Sameach Pesach to you, to everyone. To you.
Thank you very much. Todah Rabbah. Todah Rabbah.
Okay, same time. Tomorrow, same channel, same time. Lior Moskowitz will be giving shiur tomorrow at 11 a.m. from darkness to light. And then only somebody as crazy as I will give a shiur Wednesday morning at 9:30 on the Haggadah. Really continue where we left off. Just continue through the Haggadah on Friday of our shiur. So everybody is welcome. Hopefully by then you'll be all rested and relaxed. So have even more time to learn. But anyways, that'll be 9:30 on Wednesday morning. And we look forward to learning with you. If I don't see you or speak to you, have a Chag Kasher Sameach, a wonderful, enjoyable holiday. It is, you know, make sure that Kasher does an impact on Sameach. That's the mitzvah is to be happy on Yom Tov. So enjoy, and everybody be well, and look forward to seeing you soon. And as always, please invite a friend to join us. It's never too late. It's always early to invite a friend to come. So everybody be well and have a wonderful day. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Oh, by the way, let me announce, we will be sending an email for those who come. Mark, Dr. Spear will not be giving his class. And we had spoken that he would be. I will send out an email. But for those who normally come Monday night, we sort of decided jointly that with lots of people traveling, that we felt that maybe so. And it's not on Pesach anyway. So he'll continue in a couple of weeks back on Rav Soloveitchik. So that's just a little note for that. And everybody be well. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Jay, and for all this wonderful Pesach program.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Okay. Be well. Bye-bye.